or at c3.ai.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa. Thank you so much. This is Art in Your Ear. Stay tuned for a really great show on your community radio station. Support for WMNF comes from your wonderful members in Florida Southern College, encouraging visitors to experience the world's largest collection of Frank Lloyd Wright architecture with a guided campus tour. Tour reservations and details can be found at flsouthern.edu/FLLW. Well, that was trying to get the road trip going. That was Lord Echo with Just Do You, inspired by seeing friend and wonderful WMNF volunteer Lisa Irwin here, and I know she's a Lord Echo fan. Hey, thanks for tuning in to Art in Your Ear today. My name's Joellen Schilke. I am, indeed, it's actually true, the hostess who loves you absolutely the mostest. I thought I had guests coming in, but I don't. So I have lined up a ton of stuff, really great stuff to play for you. I have some different takes on poetry. I've been thinking a lot about writing, and so we've got some stuff on writing and lots of music and lots of good stuff that way. We also realize that fall is a time of the year when a lot is happening. It's very busy for us during the WMNS Fall Pledge Drive. Thank you so much to everyone who donated to the show. I want to thank Debbie. I know she's given to the show in the past week. Thank you so much, Debbie. I want to let you know, too, that if donating at that time did not fit into your schedule, well, that's okay. You still have time to donate. It's not too late to give. Please call us at 813-238-8001 on weekdays, or you can give through WMNF.org or use the app. You can try calling the studio, but it's kind of crazy. Maybe after 2 o'clock, then you can take that thing off of your list, to-do list, and enjoy your radio home. Thank you so much. All right, let's see if I can get this thing playing, because I'm so excited. Next Wednesday night, this is what I want to be doing. I hope you're doing it with us.
Hey, this is Scott Elliott from It's the Music Wednesday. I'm taking the catwalk on a road trip to the Nebraska Mini Mart on Wednesday, October 30th from 6 to 10 p.m. I'll be spinning all the great tunes you love, and we'll have fun and games. But mostly, I'm looking forward to getting out of the studio and meeting you. It's the All Souls Edition Road Trip. Holla!
Baby, Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
Ago, there lived a giant, a selfish giant, whose stunning garden was the most beautiful in all the land. One evening, this giant came home and found all these children playing in his garden, and he became enraged. "My own garden is my own garden," the giant said, and he built this high wall around it. The author Oscar Wilde wrote the story of the selfish giant in 1888. Almost 100 years later, that giant moved into my Brooklyn childhood and never left. I was raised in a religious family, and I grew up reading both the Bible and the Quran. The hours of reading, both religious and recreational, far outnumbered the hours of television watching. Now, on any given day, you could find my siblings and I curled up in some part of our apartment reading. Sometimes unhappily, because on summer days in New York City, the fire hydrant blasted. And to our immense jealousy, we could hear our friends down there playing in the gushing water, their absolute joy making its way up through our open windows. But I learned that the deeper I went into my books, the more time I took with each sentence, the less I heard the noise of the outside world. And so, unlike my siblings who were racing through books, I read slowly, very, very slowly. I was that child with her finger running beneath the words until I was untaught to do this, told big kids don't use their fingers. In third grade, we were made to sit with our hands folded on our desk, unclasping them only to turn the pages, then returning them to that position. Our teacher wasn't being cruel. It was the 1970s, and her goal was to get us reading not just on grade level, but far above it. And we were always being pushed to read faster. But in the quiet of my apartment, outside of my teacher's gaze, I let my finger run beneath those words. And that selfish giant again told me his story, how he had felt betrayed by the kids sneaking into his garden, how he had built this high wall, and it did keep the children out. But a gray winter fell over his garden and just stayed and stayed. With each rereading, I learned something new about the hard stones of the roads that the kids were forced to play on when they got expelled from the garden. About the gentleness of a small boy that appeared one day, and even about the giant himself. Maybe his words weren't rageful after all. Maybe they were a plea for empathy, for understanding. My own garden is my own garden. Years later, I would learn of a writer named John Gardner who referred to this as the fictive dream or the dream of fiction. And I would realize that this was where I was inside that book, spending time with the characters and the world that the author had created and invited me into. As a child, I knew that stories were meant to be savored, that stories wanted to be slow, and that some author had spent months, maybe years, writing them, and my job as the reader, especially as the reader who wanted to one day become a writer, was to respect that narrative. Long before there was cable or the internet or even the telephone, there were people sharing ideas and information and memory through story. It's one of our earliest forms of connective technology. It was the story of something better down the Nile that sent the Egyptians moving along it. The story of a better way to preserve the dead that brought King Tut's remains into the 21st century. And more than 2 million years ago, when the first humans began making tools from stone, someone must have said, "What if?" And someone else remembered the story. And whether they told it through words or gestures or drawings, it was passed down, remembered. Hit a hammer and hear its story. The world is getting noisier. We've gone from boomboxes to Walkman to portable CD players to iPods to any song we want whenever we want it. We've gone from the four television channels of my childhood to the seeming infinity of cable and streaming. As technology moves us faster and faster through time and space, it seems to feel like stories getting pushed out of the way, I mean literally pushed out of the narrative. But even as our engagement with stories change, or the trappings around it morph from book to audio to Instagram to Snapchat, we must remember our finger beneath the words. Remember that story, regardless of the format, has always taken us to places we never thought we'd go, introduced us to people we never thought we'd meet, and shown us worlds that we might have missed. So while as technology keeps moving faster and faster, I am good with something slower. My finger beneath the words has led me to a life of writing books for people of all ages. Books meant to be read slowly, to be savored. My love for looking deeply and closely at the world, for putting my whole self into it, and by doing so, seeing the many, many, many possibilities of a narrative turned out to be a gift. Because taking my sweet time taught me everything I needed to know about writing. And writing taught me everything I needed to know about creating worlds where people could be seen and heard, where their experiences could be legitimized, and where my story, read or heard by another person, inspired something in them that became a connection between us, a conversation. And isn't that what this is all about? Finding a way at the end of the day to not feel alone in this world, and a way to feel like we've changed it before we leave? Stone to hammer, man to mummy, idea to story, and all of it, remember it. Sometimes we read to understand the future. Sometimes we read to understand the past. We read to get lost, to forget the hard times we're living in. And we read to remember those who came before us, who lived through something harder. I write for those same reasons. Before coming to Brooklyn, my family lived in Greenville, South Carolina, in a segregated neighborhood called Nickeltown. All of us there were the descendants of a people who had not been allowed to learn to read or write. Imagine that. The danger of understanding how letters form words. The danger of words themselves. The danger of illiterate people and their stories. But against this backdrop of being threatened with death for holding on to a narrative, our stories didn't die. Because there is yet another story beneath that one. And this is how it has always worked. For as long as we've been communicating, there's been the layering to the narrative, the stories beneath the stories and the ones beneath those. This is how story has and will continue to survive. As I began to connect the dots that connected the way I learned to write and the way I learned to read to an almost silenced people, I realized that my story was bigger and older and deeper than I would ever be. And because of that, it will continue. Among these almost silenced people, there were the ones who never learned to read. Their descendants, now generations out of enslavement, if well off enough, had gone on to college, grad school, beyond. Some, like my grandmother and my siblings, seemed to be born reading, as though history stepped out of their way. Some, like my mother, hitched on to the Great Migration wagon, which was not actually a wagon, and kissed the South goodbye. But here is the story within that story. Those who left and those who stayed carried with them the history of a narrative, knew deeply that writing it down wasn't the only way they could hold on to it, knew they could sit on their porches or their stoops at the end of a long day and spin a slow tale for their children. They knew they could sing their stories through the thick heat of picking cotton and harvesting tobacco, knew they could preach their stories and sew them into quilts, turn the most painful ones into something laughable, and through that laughter exhale the history of a country that tried again and again and again to steal their bodies, their spirit, and their story. So as a child, I learned to imagine an invisible finger taking me from word to word, from sentence to sentence, from ignorance to understanding. So as technology continues to speed ahead, I continue to read slowly, knowing that I am respecting the author's work and the story's lasting power. And I read slowly to drown out the noise and remember those who came before me, who probably the first people who finally learned to control fire and circled their new power of flame and light and heat. And I read slowly to remember the selfish giant, how he finally tore that wall down and let the children run free through his garden. And I read slowly to pay homage to my ancestors who were not allowed to read at all. They too must have circled fires, speaking softly of their dreams, their hopes, their futures. Each time we read, write, or tell a story, we step inside their circle, and it remains unbroken. And the power of story lives on. Thank you.
Isn't that lovely? That was Jacqueline Woodson. doing them. Hey, tonight there is an opening at the Safety Harbor Art and Music Festival, Music Center, with Natty Moss Bond's work, Thoughts Become Things. Safety Harbor Art and Music Center is located at 706 2nd Street North in Safety Harbor. There's going to be lots of music from all of your friends. So stick with us. You're listening to Art New Year on 88.5.
From those nights in Tiananmen Square, he's coming from the field, saying exactly real, oh, it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the wars against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy has come.
sentimental if you know what I mean. Oh, I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left or right, I'm just staying home tonight, getting lost in that hopeless little screen. But I'm stubborn as those garbage bags, the time cannot decay. I'm junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy has come to the USA. To the USA. To the USA. To the USA.
And that's the Lumineers covering Leonard Cohen's Democracy. Who else did we hear from? A lot of people. Jacqueline Woodson. We had some Timothy, Silver Timothy by Damon Jurado. The New Colossus, the poem on the Statue of Liberty from Emma Lazarus. We heard Morning Bell earlier with You Needn't Have Bothered and Lord Echo. And we've got some music coming up. But next, we're going to be playing a talk. Someone requested this, and I was like, oh, it's such a good talk. That was a really excellent request. So we're going to be playing that in just a moment, but I just want to first say thank you to everyone who supported your radio home during our fall pledge drive. So many of you were so generous, so generous, especially to Art and Year. Thank you so much. We came a little bit short, including this show. If you missed it, you can still get in on the action. Give through WMNF.org or the app or call us at 813-238-8001. You can try the studio, but it's a little hairy right now, so maybe go online, I'm sorry, right now or after 2 o'clock. We can do this. So we're going to listen to a talk that I played a while ago. Her name's Anne Lamott, and she decided to write down everything she knew for sure. And this is a beautiful talk. I hope you like it.
My 7-year-old grandson sleeps just down the hall from me, and he wakes up a lot of mornings and he says, you know, this could be the best day ever. And other times in the middle of the night, he calls out in a tremulous voice, Nana, will you ever get sick and die? I think this pretty much says it for me and most of the people I know, that we're a mixed grill of happy anticipation and dread. So I sat down a few days before my 61st birthday, and I decided to compile a list of everything I know for sure. There's so little truth in the popular culture, and it's good to be sure of a few things. For instance, I am no longer 47. Although this is the age I feel and the age I like to think of myself as being, my friend Paul used to say in his late 70s that he felt like a young man with something really wrong with him. Our true person is outside of time and space, but looking at the paperwork, I can in fact see that I was born in 1954. My inside self is outside of time and space. It doesn't have an age. I'm every age I've ever been, and so are you. Although I can't help mentioning as an aside that it might have been helpful if I hadn't followed the skincare rules of the 60s, which involved getting as much sun as possible, well, slathered in baby oil and basking in the glow of a tinfoil reflector shield. It was so liberating, though, to face the truth that I was no longer in the last throes of middle age that I decided to write down every single true thing I know. People feel really doomed and overwhelmed these days, and they keep asking me what's true. So I hope that my list of things I'm almost positive about might offer some basic operating instructions to anyone who's feeling really overwhelmed or beleaguered. Number one, the first and truest thing is that all truth is a paradox. Life is both a precious, unfathomably beautiful gift, and it's impossible here on the incarnational side of things. It's been a very bad match for those of us who were born extremely sensitive. It's so hard and weird that we sometimes wonder if we're being punked. It's filled simultaneously with heartbreaking sweetness and beauty, desperate poverty, floods and babies and acne and Mozart, all swirled together. I don't think it's an ideal system. Number two, almost everything will work again if you unplug it for a few minutes. Including you. Three, there is almost nothing outside of you that will help in any kind of lasting way unless you're waiting for an organ. You can't buy, achieve, or date serenity and peace of mind. This is the most horrible truth, and I so resent it. But it's an inside job. And we can't arrange peace or lasting improvement for the people we love most in the world. They have to find their own ways, their own answers. You can't run alongside your grown children with sunscreen and chapstick on their hero's journey. You have to release them. It's disrespectful not to. And if it's someone else's problem, you probably don't have the answer anyway. Our help is usually not very helpful. Our help is often toxic. And help is the sunny side of control. Stop helping so much. Don't get your help and goodness all over everybody. This brings us to number four. Everyone is screwed up, broken, clingy, and scared. Even the people who seem to have it most together. They are much more like you than you would believe. So try not to compare your insides to other people's outsides. It will only make you worse than you already are. Also, you can't save, fix, or rescue any of them or get anyone sober. What helped me get clean and sober 30 years ago was the catastrophe of my behavior and thinking. So I asked some sober friends for help, and I turned to a higher power. One acronym for God is the gift of desperation, G-O-D, or as a sober friend put it, by the end I was deteriorating faster than I could lower my standards. So God might mean, in this case, me running out of any more good ideas. While fixing and saving and trying to rescue is futile, radical self-care is quantum, and it radiates out from you into the atmosphere like a little fresh air. It's a huge gift to the world. When people respond by saying, "Well, isn't she full of herself?" just smile obliquely like Mona Lisa and make both of you a nice cup of tea. Being full of affection for one's goofy, self-centered, cranky, annoying self is home. It's where world peace begins. Number five, chocolate with 75% cacao is not actually a food. Its best use is as a bait in snake traps or to balance the legs of wobbly chairs. It was never meant to be considered an edible. Number six. Writing. Every writer you know writes really terrible first drafts, but they keep their butt in the chair. That's the secret of life. That's probably the main difference between you and them. They just do it. They do it by prearrangement with themselves. They do it as a debt of honor. They tell stories that come through them one day at a time, little by little. When my older brother was in fourth grade, he had a term paper on birds due the next day, and yeah, he hadn't started. So my dad sat down with him with an Audubon book, paper, pencils, and Brads, for those of you who have gotten a little less young and remember Brads. And he said to my brother, "Just take it bird by bird, buddy. Just read about pelicans and then write about pelicans in your own voice. And then find out about chickadees and tell us about them in your own voice. And then geese." So the two most important things about writing are bird by bird and really god-awful first drafts. If you don't know where to start, remember that every single thing that happened to you is yours and you get to tell it. If people wanted you to write more warmly about them, they should have behaved better. You're going to feel like hell if you wake up someday and you never wrote the stuff that is tugging on the sleeves of your heart. Your stories, memories, visions, and songs, your truth, your version of things in your own voice. That's really all you have to offer us. And that's also why you were born. 7. Publication and temporary creative successes are something you have to recover from. They kill as many people as not. They will hurt, damage, and change you in ways you cannot imagine. The most degraded and evil people I've ever known are male writers who've had huge bestsellers. And yet, returning to number one, that all truth is paradox, it's also a miracle to get your work published, to get your stories read and heard. Just try to bust yourself gently of the fantasy that publication will heal you, that it will fill the Swiss cheesy holes inside of you. It can't. It won't. But writing can. So can singing in a choir or a bluegrass band. So can painting community murals or birding or fostering old dogs that no one else will. Number 8, families. Families are hard, hard, hard. No matter how cherished and astonishing they may also be. Again, see number 1. At family gatherings where you suddenly feel homicidal or suicidal, remember that in all cases, it's a miracle that any of us specifically were conceived and born. Earth is forgiveness school. It begins with forgiving yourself. And then you might as well start at the dinner table. That way you can do this work in comfortable pants. When William Blake said that we are here to learn to endure the beams of love, he knew that your family would be an intimate part of this, even as you want to run screaming for your cute little life. But I promise you are up to it. You can do it, Cinderella. You can do it. And you will be amazed. 9, food. Try to do a little better. I think you know what I mean. Number 10, grace. Grace is spiritual WD-40, or water wings. The mystery of grace is that God loves Henry Kissinger and Vladimir Putin and me exactly as much as he or she loves your new grandchild. Go figure. The movement of grace is what changes us, and heals our world. To summon grace, say, help, and then buckle up. Grace finds you exactly where you are, but it doesn't leave you where it found you. And grace won't look like Casper the Friendly Ghost, regrettably. But the phone will ring or the mail will come, and then against all odds, you'll get your sense of humor about yourself back. Laughter really is carbonated holiness. It helps us breathe again and again and gives us back to ourselves. And this gives us faith in life and each other. And remember, grace always bats last. 11. God just means goodness. It's really not all that scary. It means the divine or a loving, animating intelligence. Or as we learn from the great Deuteriorata, the cosmic muffin. A good name for God is not me. Emerson said that the happiest person on earth is the one who learns from nature the lessons of worship. So go outside a lot and look up. My pastor said you can trap bees on the bottom of mason jars without lids because they don't look up. So they just walk around bitterly bumping into the glass walls. Go outside, look up, secret of life. And finally, death, number 12. Wow and yikes. It's so hard to bear when the few people you cannot live without die. You'll never get over these losses, and no matter what the culture says, you're not supposed to. We Christians like to think of death as a major change of address. But in any case, the person will live again fully in your heart if you don't seal it off. Like Leonard Cohen said, there are cracks in everything, and that's how the light gets in, and that's how we feel our people again fully alive. Also, the people will make you laugh out loud at the most inconvenient times. And that's the great good news. But their absence will also be a lifelong nightmare of homesickness for you. Grief and friends, time and tears will heal you to some extent. Tears will bathe and baptize and hydrate and moisturize you in the ground on which you walk. Do you know the first thing that God says to Moses? He says, take off your shoes, because this is holy ground, all evidence to the contrary. It's hard to believe, but it's the truest thing I know. When you're a little bit older, like my tiny personal self, you realize that death is as sacred as birth. And don't worry, get on with your life. Almost every single death is easy and gentle, with the very best people surrounding you for as long as you need. You won't be alone. They'll help you cross over to whatever awaits us. As Ram Dass said, when all is said and done, we're really just all walking each other home. I think that's it, but if I think of anything else, I'll let you know. Thank you.
And that's Anne Lamott with her lovely speech, 12 Truths. Thank you guys so much for listening to Art in Your Ear. Thank you to Anonymous, who liked a song that I played. Thank you. And thank you for all you do. You're a wonderful person, Anonymous. So that's wonderful. Hey, there are some other things going on. There's so much going on, and I want to let you know really quickly. We only have a few minutes left. Coming up next is Live Music Showcase right after the NPR News. After that, both Reverend Billy and Ronnie Elliott will be here to do Rhythm Revival. That's followed by Bumpy Ride, and I would not be surprised if Rebel is does his Halloween show. I think he waits all year. It's his favorite holiday, so make sure you tune in from Bumpy Ride and hear the Halloween show, followed swiftly, right on its heels. Bumpy Ride is 5 to 7, followed by Route 66, and I'm pretty sure Mike Vinyl is doing his Halloween show tonight. So great, great, great stuff coming up on the radio. I hope you'll stick with us all the time. And thanks again to everybody who supported WMNF during our fall drive. We're so thankful for the thousands of dollars that you've given us and thousands of people that gave us. We still have some money that we have to make up, and you can do that. You can go online to WMNF.org, or you can call 813-238-8001. You can do it all, but thank you very much, everyone that does it. I put some stuff up on our Facebook page coming up. Natty's opening is tomorrow night, not tonight. Also tomorrow, you can meet Clyde Butcher and Nikki. They're having their annual fall festival, and that is down off the Tamiami Trail in Achupi. I don't know how to say it. It's down on his place in Big Cypress. It's the Big Cypress Gallery, and that is tomorrow and Sunday, and it is from 9 in the morning to 4 p.m. each day. And again, that's up on our Facebook page. Also, the Shine Mural Festival is closing up. It's winding up its stuff this week. It's all winding up, and so there's a big party. There's a bunch of parties on Saturday for the Shine Mural Festival. There is a map. There's a map to the Shine Mural Festival, so you can see where all the murals are, and check them out, and then go to the party. I'm going to try to ride my bike around on Sunday. I have to go to a conference tomorrow, but I'm going to ride my bike around on Sunday and take pictures and post them. So please like Art in Your Ear on Facebook and follow it, and then you'll get lots of mural stuff. Well, I got to get out of here. There's so much coming up. that we got to get out of their way. Please stay tuned. We're going to go out with some Leonard Cohen for you. Since we played a cover of him, this song is always just one of my most beautiful, beautiful, beloved songs. You are listening to WMNF Tampa, the best little station in the whole damn nation. You've been listening to Art in Your Ear. Please stay tuned. Thank you for being part of this station. Love you more than I can say. Talk to you next week.
There was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you?
WMNF.